Welcome to the Honey Drop, your all-access pass to the Hamilton Honey Badgers. I'm Andrew Damelin. Today's guest, Fayetteville, North Carolina's finest, the man in the middle, plays a little power forward for you as well for the Honey Badgers. His name, Zane Waterman. Zane, how are you?
I'm doing good, Andrew. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And I want to know how you're doing specifically, because last week there was a little bit of an incident while you were on the road. You don't have to go into the gory details or anything, but you had to miss a game because of food poisoning. Can you tell me, are you feeling better now, first of all?
I'm feeling a lot better now. Felt like I was on my deathbed. I think it was a Tuesday in Saskatchewan, the game day. It was probably the worst I've ever felt, but I feel a lot better now. Thankful for that.
Yeah, I know, and everyone in Hamilton's thankful for that as well. So that's where you are today, and I kind of want to go along the journey as to how you got here. And I wanted to start out close to the beginning. I know you started playing basketball when you were 7 years old. Mm-hmm. Is there a first vivid basketball memory you have as a kid?
Maybe not like a specific situation, but really I just remember growing up, playing at my local YMCA, just going there almost every day, just shooting around, playing with some older guys, playing some pickup here and there, and, you know, playing maybe in the little rec leagues there at the YMCA. That's probably the most vivid beginning basketball memory I have.
And you're in a basketball hotbed, like the state of North Carolina.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, actually, if you're more of like a Charlotte NBA fan versus like a Durham or Chapel Hill Duke.
Oh, no. I was a Duke fan growing up my entire life, so there's a lot of Duke guys I tried to mirror my game off of. And, so growing up in the middle of that rivalry, it was always fun. The next day after the rivalry games, going to school, talking trash to your classmates and stuff. If it was a bad year for Duke, it wasn't so fun, but a lot of good years.
So there's one player from Duke that, from the era where you'd start to be watching basketball, that I thought of you as a player comparison. You tell me, be honest, do you think this is a brutal comparison or like a decent comparison? When I think of you, I kind of think of Carlos Boozer.
Carlos Boozer. I'll take it. I think I shoot a little better than Carlos Boozer.
You got more range. You got more range. But, you know, that's just today's basketball, right? You got to have more range as
that
a power
forward. That was right around, when I started like getting into it. Carlos Boozer, that was probably by when he was finishing up. That was when I was starting to watch. But like my favorite player that I from Duke that was the first guy I remember, it was Mike Dunleavy. He was my guy. Like I after he graduated from Duke, I used to collect all his rookie cards, all his jersey cards. It was so hard because he's not a popular player, so it was so hard trying to find a jersey for him when he was on the Warriors. But yeah, I almost had everything Mike Dunleavy you could have at that age.
That's so funny you mention him, because you say he's not a popular player as if like he doesn't have
NBA
a lot of fans.
NBA-wise.
Right. Yeah. But first of all, he's obviously a god at Duke. But I don't think most people realize, and maybe you would agree, like he plays with an edge to him.
Yeah.
Actually, like there's – I remember one really hard foul just that comes to mind. He committed a really hard foul, got him suspended for the Bulls, I think. But like – do you see any of that edge that he plays with in you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think if people watch Honey Badgers games, they probably recognize my edge. My teammates joke around. They call me the villain of the CBL. So it's not purposeful. I don't mean to have an edge, but, you know, I think the whole team, all of our guys, we kind of have an edge because, you know, we're passionate about the game and we love to win and we do a lot of it and we'll do anything to win. So it's a lot of fun, though.
But going back to Fayetteville, as you're getting into the game as a, I guess, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old, is there a time where you're going into opposing gyms, high schools, AAU games, where perhaps you noticed people just underestimating you just based on your appearance?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's kind of like the thing, you know, the I Hate Christian Laettner documentary that came out. When that came out, I was in high school. And I was like, I really felt like I could relate to that a lot, because a lot of people, you know, I probably look like a softer player and everything, and then I come out and I'm maybe using some profanity and fouling hard. So then I think that makes them hate me a little bit more. So I felt like I could relate.
And so I guess that being underestimated, that motivates you. That's something that like you almost welcome. Is that fair to say?
You kind of wear it on your sleeve after a while, and you enjoy it.
And growing up in Fayetteville, I know Dennis Smith Jr. came two years after. Did you play with him at all against him?
We used to play together, not together, but against each other. And sometimes he would come to our gym and work out and stuff. I think my high school coach was working with him for AAU or something, and he ended up playing for the same AAU team as me. Had nothing to do with me, but we used to play against him, and there was a guy, he was all over like the Ball Is Life and the Hoop Mixtape stuff for dunking like crazy, Quay Parker, and I don't know a Duke guy actually that came from the same high school as Dennis Smith Jr., Joey Baker, but he was way after me. I think he was probably in like seventh grade when I was junior or senior. But yeah, in that area, there was a lot of good talent, even guys that, you know, you don't hear of, but they had solid college careers or they went to good schools and played and transferred around. But yeah, I mean, Dennis was the type of guy, he was a really good player, but he was kind of overshadowed at first by people that don't really know basketball because he was playing with Quay Parker, who had crazy athleticism, and he was dunking. And Dennis obviously has crazy athleticism now, but his didn't really come till later. So, but if you were a real basketball fan, you could really see the skill he had and see that he was the better player. But obviously. He's doing really well now.
And did he go to NC State?
Yeah, he went to State for a year, I think, when Godfrey was there.
So there's something Canadians don't understand at all, and it's first of all, it's the North Carolina college basketball like fanaticism, but most specifically, the coach is God type of thing with Coach K and with Roy Williams.
I got a funny story about Coach K. we were on an AAU tournament, and I think it was in Las Vegas, and I was like 16, 17, and I was playing with some really good players, and we're in the gym, and the bleachers are out, and the bleachers are filled with college coaches, like UNC, NC State, all the big schools. Kentucky was in there, and then all of a sudden, like, you get a weird feeling in the gym, like, and like everyone felt it. And then you look over and Coach K just walked in. And it was like, oh, my God. And then after the game, one of my teammates followed him to the bathroom to see if he washed his hands, to see see if he could catch him doing something wrong. Yeah.
So that's just the presence. Yeah, that's just the cachet.
It was different. It was very different. Basketball God for sure. It's going to be different this year, him not coaching. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. This was his last season, and I imagine – it was Duke North Carolina in the Final Four. And how much? So, how did you spend your time watching that game? Where were you watching that game?
Honestly, since I've been overseas, I've kind of stopped watching college basketball. It gets to too much. You know, you can't stay up till 3 a.m. watching these West Coast games and stuff. So, it's better if I just completely take myself out of it. But anything college basketball while I was in college or before I went to college, I could tell you about. But now I've separated myself from it.
Maybe that's a good idea. Yeah. So you don't go to anywhere in North Carolina. You go to Manhattan for your college career. Yeah. And what I like to do is I like to have, with everybody that I talk to, I like to have, like, dates. And can you remember what happened on that date?
Well, usually I have a good memory. I hope so.
So this is a different one. So the date, first of all, maybe it'll pop to mind right away. If not, I'll give you a couple hints. February 4th, 2017.
February 4th, 2017. All right, so that's later on in the season. That could be like an Iona or Ryder game, maybe.
So you're on the
right
track.
Probably my junior year.
It's a more of a highlight. It's a highlight than like a game. More of a highlight than a game result.
That might have been the dunk against Marist,
that's
maybe.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, I got him pretty good. I think he's actually gonna play with the guy I dunked on. I think he plays with Kevin this year, in Holland. So. I'll have to remind him about that.
Can you, I mean, I imagine you remember that moment pretty well, but like for us lay people who don't quite understand what it's like to like catch a body when you're going up, like, is there a moment like right before you're about to go up, you see someone maybe's coming over late and you got the momentum and like that emotional arc of knowing you're about to catch somebody and then throwing it down? Can you take us through that?
Well, for me, it's different than if you ask somebody like Michael Okafor, but for me, it's more of when I feel like I have the momentum and it's like, I hope I get the ball right here, because if I do, I know I can do something with it. But for people like Michael, he probably can do that almost at any chance. But that situation, it was like I was running downhill. I knew I had good momentum. I saw the guys under the basket. I knew I had time to get it off, and he dumped it off to me right at the perfect time.
Yeah, you like that Statue of Liberty type of dunk where you get the palm on the ball. That's the only way. Well, in my younger days when I could dunk the ball, is like if I get the palm on it, then I could go. Then I could go up.
Yeah, because that's how I started, and I would just practice trying to dunk so much that I think it's just a habit that kind of stuck with me.
And you remember the name of the guy that you dunked on?
Was it Paulson?
Yes, it was Paulson. Yeah,
I only know because I saw he signed with Key Van's team. So it's not something I keep in my mind. That would be kind of weird.
And so, you know, 4-year successful Manhattan career, and then you go all over the world.
Yeah.
Can you remember what it was like to touch down in Lapua, Finland?
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've been outside of the States until that point.
Yeah, I'd been to Ireland. We had an in-season tournament. We actually had the first Division I win in Europe. We played in Belfast, Ireland, and we beat, I think, Holy Cross in Belfast. That was my first time out of the States. But, yeah, with your team, it's different. But first time touching down in Lapua was a culture shock. And I always tell like rookies that ask me about it, I'll be like it's hard when you get to your apartment and the person from the team drops you off and they're like, all right, we'll see you at practice tomorrow. And then the door closes and you're just like, wow. And then that's the first time. And then the second time is when you go to the grocery store and you're just like, I have no idea what to do. Like, I've been to so many grocery stores before, but I'm so lost right now.
Yeah, population of 14,000 people.
And the 14,000 were either plus 65 or like minus 14. It was all like grade school kids and like senior citizens. Everybody else would like move out to the nearest biggest city. So, yeah, it was different.
And, you know, you play all over. You played in Argentina, Germany, Czech Republic, Poland. As you go through, do you start to think, I need to, like, assimilate myself into this new place? I need to make this my home rather than make it a side part of my basketball game?
Yeah. So, for me, it was harder to do that when I was away from my fiance, Desandra. But when she comes with me, it's a lot easier. We kind of, like, we really, for example, in New Zealand and in Portugal, we really dove into the culture, dove into the town, you know, found favorite restaurants, found favorite places to go on, you know, walks and hikes and, you know, favorite things to do. But when you're alone and you're missing somebody away from home, it's a lot harder to really doing that because you don't want to build too many memories without them. But I mean, for example, in Czech Republic and Poland, you didn't really have the opportunity because it was during COVID times. Almost everything was shut down. So
that's like triply hard.
Yeah. So like Poland was a city I really want to go back to, Bydgoszcz, because it was an amazing city, but so much was shut down. You couldn't even have indoor dining. And there was amazing restaurants in that city, but I'm ordering it on Uber Eats and it's coming to my apartment. I'm eating it in my living room every night. So you don't really feel like you can, you know, dive into the culture. But from now on, I definitely think that helps, diving into the culture, trying to learn the language as much as you can. And, you know, trying to communicate with the locals as much as you can, because, you know, you go on a vacation to, you know, Jamaica or Mexico, you go for 7 days, you're seeing the inside of a resort. When you really like live somewhere for 9-10 months, that's how the country is. That's where you really learn about the culture and how people think, how people eat, how people, you know, even drive, because it's different everywhere. But it's probably one of the best things about this job.
So you travel around, and there's times when your fiance is with you, times where you gotta figure it out for yourself.
Yeah.
And that's obviously more difficult. How are you able to compartmentalize, you know, that feeling of loneliness and just channeling it all towards basketball?
Yeah.
And because you got to be at your best when you're playing at that level.
Yeah, you know, I think almost every overseas player will tell you that's kind of the time where you don't feel any pain, is when you're on the court or when you're at practice. But those days when maybe you're on a losing streak and you're on the bus ride, that's when the things go into your mind. You're like, oh my God, like, how am I doing this? I don't understand, how am I doing this? But as soon as, you know, even the tough practices, when you get there, you're like, oh, this is why I'm doing it. The games where you have those fun highlights or those, you know, those really great games, that's when you're like, okay, this all makes sense. This is why I'm killing myself.
And as the villain of the CEBL, I wonder if it started a little bit earlier, because there are some road crowds you hear about overseas. Is there a particular road crowd or two that you could think of where you walked in, you're like, whoa, and then you maybe showed out perhaps?
I mean, when I was in college, our rival was Iona, and out of conference it was Fordham. Our general manager, Jermaine School, we usually got the better end of those battles when I was there. If you ask Jermaine, he might tell you something different. But yeah, I used to have a bad reputation with those teams, but also for some reason with Ryder, who wasn't a rival of ours, they didn't like me for some reason. And I used to always have pretty good games against them, so I would get the better end of that rivalry. But then you go overseas and it's like, once again, different cultures. For example, when I was in Finland, everyone was very polite, and like, you go to the games, the away games, and no one's really yelling anything at you. It's all more like positive for their team and nothing negative. And then you go to Germany, and sometimes it's negative from your own team, your own fans. And
yeah, Jermaine played in Germany too.
He said the
same thing.
Exactly. And then you go to a place like Argentina, and that's like the soccer culture, and you see those soccer games, the rivalry soccer games, and it gets similar in the basketball court. The games that are close, the away fans will come out, and they'll have the flags, and they'll have the chants, and the drums, and the horns, and they'll be chanting. It's a lot of fun. And also Czech Republic was COVID times, but no fans really, and not a big fan base for that team. And then I got bought out and went to Poland. And Poland was also COVID times, but they would sneak in fans on the side that wasn't have the cameras. So it was a lot of fun then. But that was another place. If you're playing well, the fans love you. If you're playing bad, they're like, all right, let's get him out of there. Next game, you have a good game. I love this guy. Let's sign him back for the 3 more years. And then it's a roller coaster. But Portugal was another place where it was similar to Argentina with the soccer culture, the fans, the chants, the yelling. If you were on, it was more of, if you were on their team, they loved you, and if you were against them, they hated you. So they would have former players that played for them, Portuguese guys, and they would boo them off the court, and it was an amazing atmosphere. But CBL is a lot of fun too.
Yeah, no, and your last stop, I think, overseas was in New Zealand, am I correct?
My last stop was Portugal, yeah.
It's Portugal.
New Zealand was last summer.
It was before that. Yeah. So I asked that, or I mentioned that, because I got another date for you. No, this is from the Czech League, actually, if my real GM game log is correct.
Yeah,
December 29th, 2020.
December 29th, 2020. That should be Czech Republic, and that was probably, you said December 29th?
Yes.
That was probably against Kolín. I had 34 maybe, and I missed 5 free throws. 5 for 10 from the free throw line. I could have had 39. I remember I was pissed I didn't get 40.
Yeah, you went 7 for 9 from the 3-point line too.
I was mad about the 2 I missed too.
Of course, that's just how you perfectionists are. Yeah. But like, you go 7 for 9 from the 3-point line. Have you ever felt it like that? Like, what is it like to feel it like that?
I mean, I think I talked to Ryan about Coach Ryan the other day about this. It's like when you're on, you feel like that feeling is never gonna stop, and when you're in a slump, you feel like that feeling is never gonna stop. So that, I think, that, like, I had a stretch of games where I was like, I was not missing, and I think that was like the tail end of it. And yeah, it's just, you don't have games like that much where you're just literally, you can hit anything. But you're a good player, you have good games over and over again, but a game like that is just special. It's like, at 34, 7 for 9, that's, can't ask for a better day than that. And the 2 I missed were probably crazy shots. Like, it was just heat checks.
Yeah, this team likes to heat check a couple of times,
yeah,
too.
You got to.
It's so funny, and I've asked Coach Schmidt about trying to live with the heat check. Like, yeah. Christian Vitale loves a good heat check, and Kobe, who's been on fire, he'll give you a good heat check.
I've wanted a couple. There was a couple, I think, last game, I think Kobe should have heat checked. When you're on that good of a run, you need to put up as many as you can.
And I want to ask you about the last game, but the game before that was against Scarborough.
Yeah.
And there was one incident where I think there was a foul. I think Estola fouled you, kind of grabbed your arm. You guys are up by 20 at this point. And then you throw the ball at him. You get a T. And then you score a basket later. Then you do the petty throw the ball to the ref play as well.
Yeah.
This type of energy channeling, does Coach Schmidt talk to you about that? Does he try to be like, hey, or is he like, listen, this guy's, you're 26 years old, am I right? Mm-hmm. Is he like, this guy's an adult, he's going to figure it out on his own?
Yeah.
How do you perceive that when you look back and the emotions of the game are outside of it? Do you feel like this is like part of me, this is what I do at certain points of the game, or maybe I need to cool off? How do you sort of envision something like that when you look back on a play like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously any kid watching basketball, you should not do that. But, you know, as a competitor, things are going to happen during the game. You're going to react. And, you know, as long as you're not completely, you know, going crazy, punting the ball into the stands, it's acceptable. But, yeah, there's a time and place for it. Obviously, we were up 20.
You knew that when you threw the ball at him. Is that fair to say? Like, I might get a tee here, or is it just, or was it just,
no,
the
emotion? It's just you're in the game. You're not thinking when a play like that. It's just based off of emotion. But, yeah, if it's a closer game, I definitely would have had that in the back of my head. Of course, coach, I would never do something like that in a close game. you know, I think we're all competitors. I think Epistola is a great player, of course, and I think he would have probably done the same thing in this situation. Most guys on our team definitely would have done the same thing or similar reaction, but it's like, yeah, you know, he was grabbing for the ball, so I figured I would give it to him. So
it was a nice gesture.
I didn't see the problem in it, but the ref, I think he saw a different issue. But, you know, it's just part of the game, though. We're competitors, and we're not always going to do the right thing. And, you know, neither is the person working at, you know, any
job,
corporate office or anything. You're going to say something you probably shouldn't say, and there'll be repercussions. And mine was a technical, and that person's might be a talk with the boss.
Yeah. So it didn't cost you too much though, because the team was up 20, like you said.
Thankfully.
And then the next game you play against Edmonton, a really physical game.
Yeah. They're a physical team. It's a lot of fun playing against them. Brody Clark, you know, he's a physical player. They got Baker, first name Jordan. I should know his first name. He's one of the best players in the league. But I just know him as Baker, the Draymond of the CBL.
Mm.
But, yeah, they got a really physical team. A couple other guys, too.
Marlon Johnson.
Yeah, you know, great players, and they got the championship pedigree. And that's what we're trying to do this year. So it's always fun battling and seeing where you're at. Compared with the other championship teams, you know, three-time winners. We're trying to get that this year. So it was a really fun game.
You're nearing the end of the season. You got a big showdown, not the next game, but the final two games of the season against Niagara, against the class of the league. So you're trying to – you have 4 days of practice now to try to round into form into the home stretch. Overall, you know, this team seems to have come together. It seems like there's a great vibe in practice. How – you know, if I'm correct on that, how has Coach Schmidt sort of helped foster that and that team environment?
I think it's all the coaches, you know, Coach Schmidt, Coach Ash, Coach Sheldon, Igor, Britt, Big Mike, CB. It's really all them. Even William, Ash, and Solomon, they really set the, you know, the environment for us. And we kind of, everybody just kind of falls into place. You know, it's what they built. And all the players come in and they just follow suit, you know. We had two new guys come in recently, helped us out for a couple weeks, Joel and Isaiah. And it's a testament to the coaches because they just come in, they buy in, and then they leave, and it's like we never skip a beat. So, all the credit goes to the coaches, but great environment. But probably the best environment I've ever played in, and I'm sure all the guys will tell you that.
Those are the type of big statements that we've gotten. I've heard a number of times, like, and you guys have been around. Like Isaiah Reese, who played under Coach Schmidt in London, said, like, he was, like, shaking his – he almost appeared emotional when I asked him about the relationship he had with Coach Schmidt. Yeah. So, yeah, it seems like the environment's a positive one, even for a few months.
You know? You know, you play with guys for 9 months, a year, and – you might never talk to them again. I think I'll talk to majority of these guys as my career goes on, and you know, even when it's over, it's a great group of guys, and this is a real genuine, you know, love and chemistry that we have, and it shows on the court.
Yeah, and you guys are in a good spot. You're 13-4.
Yeah, we should be in a better spot, but you know.
Well, you're in a battle. You're in a battle for that top spot for bye.
We love to make it interesting.
Yeah, you guys definitely do. Anyway, you guys are on a really good path. And Zane, I really appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
I appreciate it.
And good luck for the rest of the season.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. And Honey Badgers, come out to the last home game, one home game against Niagara. We really hope to see you there. And we appreciate all the support to this point. Andrew, thank you for having me.